Welcome in, Rob. That intro always gets me. It puts me in the right mood. It's late night, so let's everybody have some fun. Get in here in the comments and let's hear all about it. Rob, this is the scariest episode that I do every single year because this is the prediction episode. This is where I ask you and I ask myself to go 3 months into the future and predict a final record for the Gamecocks.
Yeah, good evening. Welcome in. Excited to be here. It is it's football season. We had high school football this weekend. If you we actually still have high school football going on from the weekend, turned into a wild and extended weekend, which also means that we are right around the corner from Carolina football, Matt. Scrimmage number two, lot to talk about, and now we can make the best prediction possible. And that is still a little bit scary, especially because we're not just talking South Carolina tonight, even though we're talking the South Carolina schedule. To make predictions, Matt, you also have to talk about the other teams. We spent weeks talking about them, but, you know, they've had developments in camp too. So when you're trying to predict South Carolina versus Tennessee or Oklahoma or Texas A&M or Georgia, you got to know what's going on with those teams and somehow try to project where they're going to be in October or November.
It's one of the hardest things that we do. I do know that Alabama has named the starting quarterback. We'll get to that here shortly. Gamecocks have had a lot going on. Obviously, we talked about injuries last week. That wasn't fun. We knew about some injuries, but we weren't able to release them. And then, you know, Rob, you and I come on the show and boom, 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 you know, like some injuries are released. So very, very thankful that as far as we know, last night, the injury speculation is largely unfounded. Might have been a guy that kind of got dinged up for a little bit, but probably came back in the scrimmage. Nothing that looks like season ending or anything like that, or even, you know, like we're going to do the schedule tonight, Rob, but Mississippi State's still like, what, 4 weeks away? Plenty of time to heal up if there are any injuries. Gamecocks did finally take advantage of this little loophole that all these athletes have to potentially come back to college, even though they have exhausted their eligibility. App State transfer defensive back Ethan Johnson is one of 16 players that actually won a legal battle in the state of Louisiana. The way I understand this, Rob, and you correct me if there's anything that I'm not saying correctly, but he's been being brought in as a backup, kind of a bridge between Judge Collier, Vicari Swain, guys we've talked a lot about on this show, but just maybe 15, 20 snaps a game at most. So, Rob, thoughts on that, and I'll get into some statistics here in a minute.
I think the depth of that third corner is crucial, Matt, and I think that's what his coaching staff is looking at. You have some younger guys there. Kasi Barnes, obviously, is one. But we've seen the injuries before. I don't even want to talk about it, right? But I think that this is a natural this is the natural progression of the conversation, is to say that you have to be prepared and build depth. And as they have moved through the summer and preseason, you know, the coaching staff felt this was a good depth piece that they could add at that position. I think that everybody's confident in what they have in Vicari Swain and Judge Collier to start off with. And I think that the rest of the group has come along well, but the experience is, and you're going to get the stats here in just a second, but the experience that you're bringing in is something that you can't underrate, Matt. I think that a lot of football has been played versus the youth that's already there. So can this be a situation where maybe Ethan Johnson comes in to be the third corner early on in the season, and then maybe some younger talent on the roster kind of overtake that spot as the season moves on? Maybe so.
Well, it's one of those things, Rob, where everyone thinks about Miles Norwood coming in last year, and everyone was so excited for Miles Norwood coming from Ball State, and I think he played in the Pac-12 or somewhere, Iowa State, before that. And this is a kid that has four times the amount of snaps that Miles Norwood had, and similar type of stats. I mean, it's not a situation where it's like, okay, this guy's miles better, pun intended, than Miles Norwood. Very nice. But This is a guy that's had three consecutive years on PFF as an over 70 coverage grade. So the guy can at least, you know, put his face in the fan and like it, like Will Muschamp used to say.
Right.
Also had 7 pass breakups and interception last year. I mean, this is a very good depth piece. I don't know how soon he's going to get on the field just because of literally coming to the program yesterday, and you have 2 weeks to get integrated to South Carolina before the first game of the season, a little less than 2 weeks, actually. But we'll see what it means. But, Rob, I really want to talk to you before we get into the nuts and bolts of the scrimmage, all of that stuff. What happened in the state of South Carolina last night in high school football? And before you start, I already know South Florence lost to Hilton Head, so we don't have to go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, I'll leave you out for today. I mean, the first thing that I would say is this turned into opening weekend of college football, high school version. We had Thursday night games, Friday night games, Saturday games, and we have a few games tomorrow on Monday night tonight, the only night we don't have high school football games for the opening weekend. Weather was a major factor. Some teams elected to push games up to Thursday. Some of those were completed. Some were not. Some were Thursday-Friday games. Then there were some Friday-Saturday games. We had some Friday-only games, Thursday-only games, Saturday-only games. Then we had some games that didn't get going on Friday that are going to be played tomorrow night. So a lot of movement. A couple of things here. One of the premier games of the week between South Point and Ridgeview was canceled due to the inability to get on the same page about a date to reschedule. The second game that was probably on the forefront of everybody's mind, a lot of back and forth between staffs and fan bases and everybody else before the game. Rock Hill goes to Irmo and knocks off the Yellow Jackets 24-14 at W.C. Hawkins Stadium. Gaffney defeated Spartanburg 24-20 in that rivalry opening up. Gaffney now down in 4A, playing a 5A rival from just down the road. Strom Thurmond, a 2A defending state champion, beats North Augusta, a 4A team that is loaded with some talent, 21-7 in the Peach Fields. And then yesterday, Matt, Northwestern falls just short against Huff, a top 20 team nationally, and we'll tie it back in there. Huff with 2 Gamecock commits and Josh Dobson and Davion Jones on the defense. So, Davion Jones specifically saw some offensive snaps, both guys back returning kicks. Josh Dobson had an interception on a tipped pass at the line of scrimmage. So 15-10 Huff over Northwestern yesterday. Explosive run from Northwestern quarterback Xavier Means early on, but not able to really sustain offensive success over the course of the game. It was tight for the entire time, but the top 20 team Huff, and when I say top 20, I mean nationally, pulls yeah, out the win. Number one team in North Carolina over what is, according to the Rivals composite, number 2 team in South Carolina in Northwestern yesterday, Matt.
Yeah, so obviously I'm still hurt. The South Florence lost. It's not a good way to start for Coach Braswell, but I do know that South Florence will be just fine and they will figure it all out. I do want to touch really quickly. I know you were at the football game last night with Davion Jones and Josh Dobson, and maybe you, Rob, you were all over the state. You might have had, you know, split body personality going everywhere. But I did hear that Davion Jones looks like a freak, looks like a guy that's just a really, really good football player. And then the Josh Dobson interception that was tipped the line of scrimmage was a very athletic play as well.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think that, you know, Davion Jones can be moved around. He's used by the Huskies at multiple spots because they're just trying to get the ball in his hands because he is just a natural football player, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The Dobson interception, he did have to kind of leave his feet and lay out to get to secure that ball. You know, he's over to the side. It's tipped at the line of scrimmage, and he was on the right side. If you're on the defensive side of the ball, the pass was actually going more towards the left side of the field, but the way it was tipped and deflected, it was spinning sideways and was coming back the other direction. And so just a really heads up play. You talk about tip drills, anybody who played the game and old school tip drills in practice, that's exactly what this was. Dobson able to be quick on his feet and lay out to secure the interception. It proved to be a huge, huge play. At that point in time, Northwestern was up 10-9. And after the interception, ball turns over to Huff and a bomb down the right sideline for a touchdown that was the game-winning score. And final score again was 15-10 Huff. So that turnover gave the Huskies the ball back. So really big, impactful play from Dobson there a lot. But like you said, yeah, I was all over the place. Did Salute Abbeville on Thursday, 107.5 Score Show on Friday, Northwestern Huff yesterday. It's been a whirlwind, man, but we're having a great time with it.
Well, make sure everybody goes to fourquarterfriday.com. You know, make sure you're part of this community. You know, Rob and Smitty do a great job with this, and you're not going to find this anywhere else in the state of South Carolina. So every high school, all day long, Rob, it's been on Facebook. Hey, how did my team do? Like, hey, I can't find the stats anywhere. Go to Four Quarter Friday. Go to the Chief Sports Network app. You'll find it. So I'm excited for that. Rob, we got to get to some scrimmage thoughts. Scrimmage number two, last scrimmage of the season. Game prep starts, I guess tomorrow. Tomorrow's Monday. What I can tell you, and Rob, feel free to chirp in wherever you'd like to. It looks like the best team that Shane Beamer's had, talking to contacts inside the program, people that might not even be folks that are, associated directly with the program, but maybe were associated in the past, still have the opportunity to go see these scrimmages. So a lot of people are excited about that. Defense yesterday probably won the scrimmage, Rob. And this now marks, I would call it like three halves of football that the defense has looked good. So Rob, thoughts on defense winning a good bit of the two scrimmages?
I think that it's a little bit expected, and I think that if you're just hearing that as a fan, I would caution you not to hit the panic button about the offense. You know what I mean, Matt? Like, I think that it should be expected for the defense to kind of if you know what's coming, then you can defend it a little bit better. And when you've been working against the same groups over and over again, you kind of learn tendencies and you can pick up on what's coming at you. But that being said, I think that the encouraging things about this defense are personnel specific. When you look at the defensive front, Matt, I think that's going to be a building block and foundational. Mm-hmm. So much positive return about the defensive tackle position specifically. The depth continues to expand. I mean, it almost seems to a point where I question how Travion Robertson, and this is something that he can do and understand that I can't. So I'm not saying that I'm questioning his ability here. But it's gonna be difficult to rotate so many guys with the amount of talent they have at that position. Everybody stays healthy. You're gonna have fresh bodies throughout the game. That can be dangerous for this Gamecocks team against whoever they're playing, because a significant push in from the interior of the defensive line is gonna set up a lot of things. You know what you got with Torian Gray. We talked about those defensive backs, specifically the corners, earlier. If you get pressure from the inside of the defensive line, never mind what you have with potentially Dylan Stewart or Caleb Herring, Julian Walker, Anthony Addison, whoever. If you get pressure from the inside, Matt, your secondary is not going to have to hang on for as long in coverage. That's going to set this team up, I think, for a little bit more success. I'm not pressing panic about the offense. I'm not sunshine pumping either. I think that interior of the defensive line is the thing that grabs me the most.
Well, I think when you talk about the defensive tackle specifically, Rob, that does two things. One, it can put pressure on the quarterback, but more than anything, it disrupts the run game.
Yep.
So if you eliminate the run game in some of your opportunities throughout the season, now you make a team one-dimensional, and then those defensive ends you were just talking about, the opportunity to pin their ears back and just go after the quarterback. And that's one of the things that I'm hearing from the scrimmages, is the fact that defensive tackles are such a strength that there is the opportunity to make life difficult on Lenore Sellers and make life difficult on the offense. Sticking on the defense, we've been talking about this for a while, Rob. I think Quayshawn Scott has actually found his way at South Carolina. He's a transfer from Kentucky, started a lot of games for the Wildcats. It looks like he's overtaken Gerald Kilgore, Jazavion Currents, we talked about, he's making a push against Peyton Williams. Other freshmen that are popping in, sticking on this defensive tackle subject, is Noah Clark, Aiden Gibson. They're two completely different players, but they're finding ways to be effective. On the secondary, we talked about Tristan Lewis. We talked about him a lot. He's going to be a good player in time for the Gamecocks. Koski Barnes is a guy that's a pretty good tackler, and he is finding his way on the field. And then, obviously, we have Ethan Johnson, who came in. Like, so none of these guys have to be counted on, but it's really nice to see they're making a difference early on for the Gamecocks in scrimmages. You know, the big thing for me, and we kind of talked about it, Rob, is Lenore Sellers like picking up this Bryles offense. And look, Clayton White, I think the best thing that happened to Clayton White, especially with teams like Tennessee on the schedule, is to have a Kendall Bryles out there dialing up in scrimmages and making those adjustments. Because look, we can talk about the defense winning, you know, maybe the last one and a half portions of the scrimmages, the only two we've gotten. But at the same time, like Kendall Bryles is figuring things out. Clayton White's figuring things out. But the Gamecocks have Tennessee on the schedule this year. We'll get to that here in a little bit. So it's not – don't be doom and gloom. Everybody likes offense. I get it. We all play fantasy football. All we want to see is our guy score 3 touchdowns, 100 yards, like our entire team go off. But defense is a side of the football as well. Speaking of offense, Rob, running backs, I think the running back room is going to be pretty daggum good. Don't sit there on Matt Fuller's blue jersey. It's a wrist injury. He'll be able to play. It's just a precautionary thing. But, Rob, tell me if I'm wrong here, but everybody tells me that the running backs look really good 1 through 4.
Yeah, that's the thing I think here, Matt, is that it is good 1 through 4. There is quality depth, and it's a good problem to have when Stan Drayton has to figure out who it is that he's going to go in. What order are these guys going to get onto the field situationally? Who fits the best? And we've been told, obviously, that it's going to be a hot hand type of deal in terms of how the carries are divvied out when things get going. So, yeah, I think from game to game, you may see somebody different being the primary ball carrier if somebody gets hot, especially with the speed the offense wants to move, Matt. There's not always going to be a, hey, let's flip these running backs in and out here in between plays. If they're moving and the offense is churning, you're going to see the same guy get fed over and over again. So opportunities for sure. I think Matt Fuller is the starter. But when you look beyond that, you can see any of these other three backs come in for another series and get going and then maybe take over for the rest of the game, or at least until things cool off, because they're going to continue to feed who is there. So anytime I ask, it seems like I get a different response about running back. Not negatively. I just mean from a personnel standpoint about who stood out on that particular day. This has been the case in spring, summer, preseason camp, Matt, not just scrimmage specific. So when I look at those guys, you know, I'm encouraged by that, because I haven't heard like, oh, well, this guy's kind of falling behind, or he doesn't have necessarily this skill set or whatever. It's just been, well, this player does these things really, really well, and it's flashing, it's standing out. I think that he could be number two next week. Yeah. Oh, this guy has a great skill set in doing this sort of thing. He's been really playing well. I think he could be the running back number two. So trusted sources giving that information. It's hard to really predict. It looked like Christian Clark, but it's hard to really see who's going to be there behind Matt Fuller. The important thing, Matt, I think, is in an SEC schedule with 4 quality running backs, when inevitably somebody gets banged up, again, we're knocking on wood for major injuries, but you're going to have the bumps, the bruises,
absolutely,
the sidelined for a part of a game, maybe a game or two at the running back position specifically. It always happens. I think that you're not going to see a major drop-off throughout this running back room as that maybe happens throughout the course of the season. So I think that's something to be encouraged about too. You mentioned Tennessee being good. This is good prep for Clayton White going up against the Vols. Kendall Bryles' brother-in-law, Jeff Lebby, is coming up with Mississippi State first, and that offense doesn't look much different from this one as well.
Exactly right.
Personnel standpoint, from a play-calling standpoint, from a scheme and an attack and a mindset standpoint even, I think you're going to see something similar. So while that helps South Carolina, keep in mind that that'll be quite the chess match, because the Bulldogs are going to know how to defend what Kendall Bryles is doing too, theoretically. I think it comes down to personnel there, Matt. We'll get to it in just a little bit. But which defense has better personnel to stop the other side might be in Columbia, in my opinion. So we'll get there, though.
Well, I think, you know, you talk about hot hand of running back, just to, you know, put a bow on this. But hot hand is not the same as hot hand somewhere else, because Kendall Bryles is going to refuse to allow the defense to substitute. So
right.
if somebody's feeling good and running smoothly and, you know, hitting those creases and hitting those gaps, it could be a situation where yeah, somebody just ran the ball six times on a drive, but guess what? Substitute, we're going to bring somebody fresh in too. And now you're going to have to deal with these fresh legs. So it's one of the things that makes the Brile system work. Rob, we gotta get into this now. This is, like I said at the top of the show, it's the hardest thing that I do every single year. And I've added another harder thing. If you want to go to thebigspur.com, I'm actually going to give my best case, worst case, and most likely case statistical projections for every skill position that the Gamecocks are going to feature. So I'm trying to butter myself up and saying this will be easier than that. But look, I know that you all are going to hold us accountable, and that's what we ask for when we do stuff like this. Like, this is hard, but at the same time, we're gonna go through it here. So, Rob, I don't want to spend too much time on Kent State and Towson yet. Crack your neck, get ready. We're about to dig in. I'll give a quick thing on Kent State. You can give something on Towson, but this should be a team that South Carolina beats pretty easily. 3.8 wins over the last 5 years. They do have some occasional big plays that the Flashes can throw out there. But, you know, Rob, for me, this entire game is about the offense running cleanly. It's about, like, making sure that everyone knows what they're doing and making it work. I don't want to see any silly penalties. I don't want to see a false start from the center again. I don't want to see turnovers if the Gamecocks can avoid it. And then, look, this is the time where you might see a Landon Duckworth or a Cutter Woods and other backups like Sequel Patterson. We've talked a lot about him. You know, maybe this is an opportunity they can get on the field early. But, Rob, you know, this should be a comfortable win. The last time these two teams have played was 1995. The Gamecocks won 77-14. So thoughts, you know, expectations. I'm going to go ahead and give the Gamecocks a win here.
Yeah, I agree. I do think that the Gamecocks will get the win there in the opener. I'm almost tempted to talk about environment in these first two, Matt. I think there's two things that come to mind for me. Number one is depth. You kind of talked about it. How quickly can this offense get rolling? How many snaps do you give to Lenore Sellers and Matt Fuller from an intention standpoint? What about offensive line? You talk about working more receivers in, Sequel Patterson. You talk about the depth of the running back room. You know, let's say Christian Clark is number two. So how many carries are you going to try to get to Isaiah Augustov and Jaron Howell in the second half if South Carolina goes up big? The offensive line is still having some position battles. Maybe you have some of those guys getting some work in the second half of that game if the offense can do what it is expected to do in the first half and truly separate to give an opportunity to build some depth in these first two games. I think that's the biggest thing for me. You know, we look at Towson, and they're an FCS team who has kind of been a 500 team the past few years, Matt. Not a lot of success against the Power Four. In fact, major blowouts. You've got the stat about 40-point differential there for teams that they're playing in the Power Four. So you would expect on paper for this to be another blowout. So depth is the big thing for me. Second thing is you have an early kickoff in that first one against Kent State before 1 o'clock. I believe it's 12:45. It's going to be hot, okay? Newsflash, it's Columbia in week one. It's going to be blazing. How does the team deal with those elements? And then week two, the first night game of the season, an opportunity for Williams-Brice to show off, get fans going. How does this offense kind of allow everybody that is sitting in that beautiful stadium pictured behind you there to exhale, Matt, and see some offensive success early on? And I think that plays into what does this look like going into week three against Mississippi State. If you rewind to last year one more time and you look at the South Carolina State game in week two, you had so much rain, the game is delayed, the offense was stagnant coming out, and that became the justification, right? Like, oh well, we had this weird start, we've been delayed, it's weird weather, so on and so forth. But it should have been an omen or a tell of what was coming for the rest of the year offensively. I think if the game
don't like it
and be successful in these first two games, there will be even a bigger energy when Mississippi State comes to town in week three.
Yeah, well, I'll just add there, Rob, that you know, one of the biggest things that South Carolina has not had the advantage of is what you see, you know, a Kentucky, a Missouri, pick XYZ team to essentially have two scrimmages, right? Like, they're going to win the game. I have some articles coming on thebigspur.com talking about three reasons the Gamecocks can win or lose every single game on the schedule. And for Towson and Kent State, there's no way that they'll lose. Like, but it's how do you win, right? Exactly. And look, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if it's going to be 77-14 or anything like that. But the big thing is to get out injury free and to start putting some principles in place that every player on the team, you know, first team to third team can enact and start feeling, you know, under the lights pressure. So, Rob, Mississippi State, this is the SEC home opener. I pulled stats, and we'll get to this throughout, but I just pulled the last 25 years. Like, I don't care about what happened in 1930. I don't care about what happened in 1999 or 2000 when the Gamecocks weren't winning. So I pulled the last 25 years. Gamecocks are 7-1 against Mississippi State. This is according to Phil Steele, who I think is one of the best in the business, one of the worst teams in the SEC. It's going to be an opportunity for the Gamecocks to get a win. Rob, you know, my question to you is, what are you at, if you were a Gamecock fan, what would you be worried about in this game? Strengths, weaknesses, and we can just ping pong it back and forth.
Yeah, well, I'll start here. I think last year on my former show, SEC Sunday Night, I was really high on Mississippi State to jump up and bite somebody, maybe overperform, clip a team in the SEC that they weren't expected to beat. And I was almost right on multiple occasions, most notably against Texas. And maybe I was a year early. I think Kamario Taylor coming into this year, there's extremely high expectations. I've been high on him for quite some time. We were able to see kind of what he could do in the bowl game for them last year specifically. Gruesome injury at the end of the game that turned out to be no tears on that knee, and he was able to.
How? I don't know.
Had no idea. Like, everybody watching thought, you know, there goes their year next year. He's going to be out. But there ended up being no tears. Here's my concern with him if I'm on the Mississippi State side of things. I almost feel like the expectation and the hype is getting a little bit too big for reality for Kamario Taylor. He is inexperienced. He does have a lot of raw and natural ability. I think he's a good quarterback. I think that he is an electric player with the ball in his hands. But how good can he be for this Mississippi State team? I think that another important piece to remember here, Matt, is that football, although there's a lot that rides on the quarterback, is a team game. And so if the defense does not put the offense in good situations, if you're a Mississippi State team, I don't know what that necessarily does for the development of a young Kamario Taylor. They do have the ability to run the football with Fluff Bothwell. I think on offense, they're going to be able to move the football against a lot of teams. And South Carolina fans, I think, need to just be prepared for the fact that as good as Clayton White has been and the talent that's on this defense for the Gamecocks, you're going to see Mississippi State move the football and put some points up. I think that's inevitable. I don't think that they're going to come in here and just get steamrolled, Matt, because their offense has enough talent and the ability of Jeff Lebby to put them in good positions, I think, to score points. We've seen them score points against good teams in years past. And I see you smiling. We have the chat box is on fire tonight. Thank you guys for being over there.
Absolutely.
Our friend Lance is just ready to see Tutties and drink beer. Latte Lance will be on site and ready to go for Gamecock football for sure. I think when we look at this Mississippi State team, Matt, I'm looking at Lenore Sellers and the athletes that South Carolina has in at the skill positions. We've talked about running back a little bit. Shift our attention over to the wide receivers. How do they match up against the secondary for Mississippi State overall?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, bringing Zach Arnett back is a strength for the Bulldogs. We've seen what he was able to do with that defense before. But just bringing scheme and coach back without a significant upgrade of personnel is not going to equate to an immediate jump for that defense. They will be better. They will be more disciplined. But can they be more talented? I'm not sure that a coach changes your talent level. You have to go out and get the guys to do that, Matt. And that's not a shot at them necessarily as much as it is. I like South Carolina skill talent over the the defensive backfield for the Bulldogs.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, you know, Rob, I don't think Mississippi State's kind of a great defense. I think that impacts things. I think this could be a bit of a high-scoring game, as you alluded to, because this is the first SEC game for South Carolina. The home game helps the Gamecocks, but the front seven for Mississippi State, if I was a Bulldog fan, would actually alarm me. We talked about it with Justin of SportsGuyValue.com. We went through all of this. It's just one of those things where Kamario Taylor is what Lenore Sellers was supposed to be, right? You know, coming out of his, you know, phenomenal redshirt freshman season. This is one where the Gamecocks have won seven of the last nine games. It's at home. You mentioned the environment. The environment should be electric. It's hard for me to pick against the Gamecocks, so I'll go 3-0 after the Mississippi State game. Rob, what about you?
Yeah, I agree. I think that game is scary. Everybody's marking it. Everybody's looking out for it. And Shane Beamer is probably the number one person who has it marked on the calendar. You're going to see what you got in these first two games and really, really evaluate the depth pieces, like we said, Matt. But this game is not going to sneak up on Shane Beamer and his staff, and I think the Gamecocks get the win.
So we'll move on to Alabama now. This is on the road, and look, the Gamecocks have had three games that they probably should win. This is probably the first game on the schedule that becomes more of a toss-up. Or honestly, if anybody that's watching this show is not a fan of the Gamecocks, they would say, what do you mean? South Carolina has a chance against Alabama. Alabama has lost, you know, four games in two consecutive years. The Gamecocks had Alabama on the ropes last year, and Williams-Brice had an opportunity to win in Tuscaloosa 2 years ago. Alabama still has more talent than South Carolina top to bottom, right? That there's no discussion about that. They have an elite secondary. They're going to have a good defense. And right now it looks like they're going to start Keelan Russell. I think that was actually announced today. So that is a redshirt freshman, only 15 career pass attempts. And the Gamecocks are going to have their hands full. They are 3-5 against the Tide since 2001, which is actually kind of crazy to think about, Rob, and, you know, based on the success that Nick Saban had. So what we'll have to look for the Gamecocks is they'll probably have to win the turnover battle here. It would be nice to play the exact same game they played last year in Williams-Brice Stadium, except for don't allow the talent to eventually overwhelm them. So, Rob, thoughts on this matchup, and then I'll let you talk. You don't have to give your prediction. I'll give mine, and then you can give yours.
Yeah, I absolutely love Keelan Russell. For those who don't know, number two quarterback in the country a couple of years ago, coming out behind Bryce Underwood, and the numbers on Bryce Underwood from a ranking standpoint and how he was rated by recruiting sites, including On3, he was off the charts, right? Keelan Russell was not far behind him. It just got overshadowed because there's a lot of talk about Bryce Underwood. Michigan had just won the national championship, and there was a lot of talk around that. So if you missed Keelan Russell, he is immensely talented. The highest rated quarterback recruit in Alabama history. You know,
isn't that crazy to think, though? The highest rated recruit in Alabama recruiting history.
And the intel on, and that's all about physical traits, right, Matt? Like that's how he's being evaluated for that number. But the intel that I received on him was just the relentless competitive nature and heart and the work in the film room, in the classroom, the studying side of things to get there. And this was from a high school standpoint. High school all-star game. Keelan Russell is showing up with a 3-4-inch thick notebook, taking notes all the way through. That's just not typical. In an all-star game, but he was there for game prep because that's how he approaches everything. I do expect him to have success. The question is, how much success can he have in a DeBoer and Grubb offense because he's dual threat? It's interesting to me that they've chosen him as the starter. I think that that's the right move, in my humble opinion. But he is a little more undeveloped than Austin Mack, and they have less familiarity with him than Austin Mack. They've been around Austin Mack for years, but the ceiling is definitely higher with Keelan Russell and what he can do with this team. Consistency is going to be a big factor for him early, and I think that the offensive line for Alabama is concerning. from an Alabama standpoint, if we're talking about most schools, Matt, it wouldn't be as big of a concern, but relative to expectations, it's a concern. They could not run the football last year. I think that their running back room will be improved. Daniel Hill, a name that South Carolina fans probably know well from recruiting, and others in that running back room. But what have they done with the offensive line, Matt, to really improve? There are some question marks. And if this South Carolina defensive front can be as successful as we think it can, that battle at the line of scrimmage could be a major factor in how this one's decided.
It's an interesting storyline for all the reasons that we've outlined. You know, for me, Rob, I think this is one of the tougher games on the schedule for South Carolina because it's your first time outside of Williams-Brice Stadium. It's your second time playing really a team that you should be able to either compete with or play with. And then the other thing, too, is that there is going to be, you know, I don't think Alabama has it on their jersey. They certainly don't have it on their helmet, but it is Alabama in Tuscaloosa. And Lenora Sellers has played there before. Nick Harbor's caught a big touchdown pass there before. The defensive staff has found ways to put the Gamecocks into the game. This is one of those games where I think if the Gamecocks played this game with the same roster 3 years into Keelan Russell's, you know, tenure, that it might be a little bit more difficult.
Yep.
And this is one with that. And look, we have some swing games, Rob, right? This is a swing game that I do believe that the Gamecocks have more than Alabama has coming back, not in a sense of skill players, but more of the unknown. And if the Gamecocks can find the exact same defensive model they used last year, right? And then Kendall Briles and Lenore Sellers have 2-3 games to get into sync. I have the Gamecocks winning this one, Rob, and I don't want to sound too crazy here, but that's where I'm at.
You know, Matt, I'm going to hedge my bets.
Yeah.
I'm going to hedge my bets. I feel really good about South Carolina in this matchup. But the ball has not bounced their way the past 2 years.
It hasn't.
Here, one factor. So I'm going to give Alabama the win, but I'll close on this. One factor that I think could go in South Carolina's favor, the success that was had 2 years ago in Tuscaloosa, highlighted by a guy named Mazio Bennett, who has been phenomenal through the offseason and preseason camp. What level of confidence after the first 3 games does Bennett have? What's the connection with Sellers? How has he risen in this Kendall Briles offense? Can he be an X factor, not just in the season, but let's narrow the focus in that Alabama game as a guy who says, look, we've been here, done this. You know, we came out here and did this a couple of years ago, and I was able to find holes wide open. Let's go out there and do it again. That's one matchup that I would keep my eyes on.
Yeah, so I mean, we talk about swing games. There's going to be a number of them, Rob. And this is a swing game. Look, you know, I gave him the win. You gave him the loss. Like, that kind of thing happens. And look, like we said, it's the toughest episode we're going to do this entire season. But after Alabama, you come back home to the friendly confines of Williams-Brice Stadium. Confines. I suck at pronouncing. I know you're going to laugh, Rob, because I know you talked to somebody yesterday that you talked about.
No way.
But anyway, I'm a little bit dyslexic, guys, so bear with me. But after Alabama, you come back to Williams-Brice Stadium. You're going to have Kentucky at home. This is Will Stein. You're going to have some mutual film here because Kentucky and Alabama have already played, right, Rob?
Yep.
So there should be opportunities to find ways to succeed. Kentucky's probably not going to be able to have a vanilla playbook. You know, whatever Will Stein wants to say, however confident he is, this is actually going to be a battle of two teams, and one team just has more talent than the other. Look, you don't want to get into a control the clock game. I don't know if that's what Will Stein wants to do, but the last thing you want to do is come off either an emotional win against Alabama or an emotional loss and lose the time of possession. So that's one of the things that I'm thinking about with this game, Rob. And, you know, this is it's a storyline for the entire season. The Gamecocks are going to face a lot of quarterbacks that don't have much film. quarterbacks that haven't, you know, attempted a lot of collegiate passes. So who is Minshew? Like, why did he not win the battle at Notre Dame? Obviously, Carr is a frontliner for the Heisman, but at the same time, like, how far off of a Heisman were you? So we'll look at this, Rob. I'll go first here. Kentucky's lost four straight to South Carolina. I think it's going to be five. So I'll give the Gamecocks a win. And now the Gamecocks are 5-0 for me, and it's getting scary.
So Michael Ray says 5-0 start, top 10. What do you think, Matt? If your prediction is correct, is this a top 10 football team after 5 weeks? Obviously, starting with Kent State Towson, not going to get you a ton of points. But maybe an Alabama win and two other SEC wins, even though those are bottom of the SEC teams. Where does that stack up from a ranking standpoint?
So I did an article on the BigSport.com you can go read. It was a couple weeks ago. I need to update it or refresh it because we actually now have the polls. But I assume that South Carolina would be receiving votes or maybe sneaking into either coaches or the AP top 25 poll. I don't, Michael, I don't think this gets you to top 10, but I think it gets you to top 18. I think if the Gamecocks lose or if the Gamecocks beat Alabama, there's going to be a lot of Alabama's not the same Alabama, and there's going to not be a lot of respect on your name, but top 18, top 15, I could see it.
I won't take a lot of time on Kentucky because I'm not real high on them this year. I think it's going to take a year or two. Let's call it what it is. Bravo to Will Stein for his confidence. Bravo for the portal haul. They did really well in recruiting. They're bringing in top tier talent. How fast can he turn the ship in 1 year? I just don't know. Is he calling plays? Is Joe Sloan calling plays? We've heard both things in the offseason, Matt. And, you know, that just tells me there's a little bit of back and forth inside the building over there. What's the messaging that's coming out to the public? Something's cooking in the background, and I'm not really sure what it is. I don't like the way it smells, though, for Kentucky. I think that they will be better in years to come. I think that Minshew fits that offense. I think that he will find success. They have some weapons at the skill position that they brought in. It's going to be a completely different Kentucky look. This is not big blue wall, Chris Rodriguez, line it up and pound it like we've seen from them in years past. I think they're going to try to sling it just a little bit here. That would be Will Stein's MO. Maybe some balance year one as they make that transition. But, Matt, I'm just not sure that there's the talent there. I think that from a program standpoint, South Carolina – feels they have reclaimed their assertiveness over that Kentucky program. And 2 years in a row for Kentucky coming down to Columbia, you know, it was not pretty last year, and I expect South Carolina to be able to take care of business in this one too.
Yeah, the only thing that I would add to there is, like, you know, with the who's calling plays, that might be gamesmanship. I would be absolutely shocked if Will Stein is not calling plays in crunch time for Kentucky. Based on his track record, I can't imagine a brand new head coach not taking ownership of that. But, you know, who knows? This is the last game we're going to get to where we have to hit a break. And Rob, coincidentally enough, it is actually the bye week after this game for South Carolina.
Beautifully placed bye week, by the way. You know, this year in and year out, you just don't really know exactly what you're going to get in terms of these bye weeks. You know, you can look at any team, high school, college, NFL, where does your break fall? It can be really important. This one, I think, is just perfect because before we get to the bye week, go ahead.
I was going to say that the Gamecocks since 2001 are 7-16 against Florida. Some key notes here, Rob, and I know you have Florida pretty dialed up, and this has been one of your games that is a swing game for South Carolina for the entire season. Rob, I don't know if you know this, you probably do, but Florida has won four straight in Gainesville in this series. And South Carolina has given up 34.5 points per game over the last six meetings. You guys know how fast Florida turns over head coaches. It doesn't seem to matter in Gainesville. There's something in the water. There might be something with the officials. There's been some questionable things that have happened, but giving up over 34.5 points per game, something has to change. Rob, this has been one of the biggest swing games on your schedule since we started talking about this, gosh, 3 months ago?
Yeah, the two biggest games bracket the bye week for me, Matt. And so we'll obviously get to the one coming out of the bye week in just a few minutes. This one is weird to me.
So weird.
It is weird to me. It is a huge question mark. I don't like Florida in 2026 as much as most of the country does. I don't know how quickly Summerall turns the ship. I have questions about them at the quarterback position. I have questions about them at offensive coordinator, just from a scheme standpoint. It's going to look completely different than what Buster Faulkner did with Georgia Tech last year. They're going to try to sling this thing around. And I'm just questioning, like, at wide receiver, they have elite talent. They have retooled this offensive line. I think that coaching changes there made a big difference as well. But who is getting them the football? I have a lot of questions about buying in until I actually see that. However, Matt, in the swamp, this one scares the heck out of me for South Carolina. Because of the success that we both have at this point. You have them 5-0. I have them 4-1. I think this one can be a sneaky one that comes up and bites them. This is a game where I'm on red alert, and I'm actually going to pick the Gators to get the win in this one.
Wow, Rob, I didn't see that coming. I know we've talked about it, and it's one of those things where I feel very similarly. I think this is, let's be honest, it's the second road test of the year. It's a road test against a team that, you know, JC Sherbert, and we love JC, you know, bigspur.com, ITG, he always talks about these spider web games and how Kentucky used to be a spider web game. This feels like a spider web game to me as well. And I can't shake the feeling that South Carolina loses this one as well. So coincidentally enough, Rob, I got the Gamecocks at 5-1 and you have the Gamecocks at 4-2 going into the bye week. And look, I know, you know, Gamecock fans don't want to hear this, but the schedule only gets tougher from here. So, Rob, let's go to a quick sponsor break, and we'll be back to finish this schedule. Well, welcome back in to the Late Night Gamecock Show. My name is Matt Anderson, and joining me is Rob Williams of FourQuarterFriday.com. Again, if you haven't checked out Four Quarter Friday, go ahead right now. It's the best place you're going to find any coverage for South Carolina athletics. And even though it's football season, that does not mean it's going to be the only thing they talk about there. They cover all of the sports in the great Palmetto State of South Carolina. So, Rob, we are getting back into the schedule. I have the Gamecocks at 5-1. You have them at 4-2. And it leads to a pivotal game coming off a bye week against the Tennessee Volunteers.
Can I ask this question before we talk Tennessee? You know, our chat box is super active over there. I want to just put that up there to you guys. If we gave you, I'll go with mine because it's worse. If we gave you 4-2 right now, would you sign on the dotted line? Because I would. Ooh. I would. Go ahead, Matt. Tennessee.
Well, I'm offering 5-1. And if you take 5-1, go ahead to fourquarterfriday.com and subscribe right now.
I would definitely sign for 5-1.
Hey, Rob, tell about the deal about Four Quarter Friday right now. How can we find you?
Look, fourquarterfriday.com, it's where you need to go for 75% off. Look, if you want to have full coverage of every sport, Matt said it just a moment ago. We're not just football, not even right now, Matt, but, you know, and it's not just major sports. We're covering Olympic sports. We've got swimming going on right now. We've got volleyball going on right now. There's so many things happening. If you have a relative, a friend, a child, a niece, a nephew that's playing in the state of South Carolina, we're covering them. All right, so get on over there. And the Varsity Club message board is a premium feature for high school sports fans. Not only do you get to get in there and chop it up with fans of other teams, kind of go back and forth, get into the debates, you get the scoop from me and Smitty, and we also have coaches, ADs, giving us announcements that are in there on those message boards, as well as those things come along. We are building that community, and we would love for you to be a part of it. 75% off, $30 for the year, so that you can get in and have every sport covered. Fall sports are happening now, winter sports are coming up, and then spring sports are the most loaded time of the year, plus summer spring football, spring or summer practices and 7-on-7s next year, leading into next year. All of that you pay one time now. You don't think about it again until next season. It's the best deal I've ever seen, Matt. It's the best deal I've ever seen. And frankly, there is no competitor who is covering every team across the state, and there's no competitor that offers that price. So that,
no,
I'll just
not
that.
At all. You guys are crushing it. I love reading it every day. It's my go-to source for South Carolina high school sports. All right, so Rob, again, I'm 5-1. You're 4-2. We have a big matchup against Tennessee coming up after the bye week. The Gamecocks are 9-15 since the year 2001 in this matchup. Look, you got two wide receivers. One of them that everybody knows, Braylon Staley from South Carolina, which, if Four Quarter Friday was in existence a couple years ago, you would have heard a lot more about him. And
yeah,
then
I just mentioned Strom Thurmond in week one. That's Bray Staley's team, and they are still good, even though he's not there. But yeah, absolutely big time talent. You mentioned Matthews there too. I see in the chat box the questions, and I'll tee you up here. A lot of talent for Tennessee. Who's gonna be throwing them the football, Matt?
That's the biggest question, because you know you talk about the talent. Deshaun Bishop, the running back, over 1,000 yards last year, yep. 16 touchdowns last year. It's either going to be Faison Brandon or George McIntyre. I think this is going to lean towards Alabama and what Alabama did and said, we have a five-star, we have an elite kid, might as well just rip the Band-Aid off early, let him develop. But I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen here, because this is a home game. Hopefully, you know, if you're a South Carolina fan, they have a lot of sand on the field. They have, you know, a number of different.
I think the bye week gives them plenty of time to bring in a few loads of sand and really get it prepped for this game.
Yeah, it's one of the craziest conspiracies I've ever seen in sports, honestly. But South Carolina found a way a couple years ago. I will say this about Tennessee: over the last two seasons, they've only really lost to elite teams. Like, I'm talking top 15, top 25 teams. So this is going to be a change for them. Because you know what Rob just, you know, teed up for me, who's throwing the football? What does that look like this year? And if the Gamecocks are coming off a loss to Florida, like Rob and I both just predicted, then this should be a hungry South Carolina team. And we are in the month of October, and we know what happens in November with Shane Beamer.
I actually really love this Tennessee team from a talent standpoint, Matt. I think that they have a lot of potential. I think that we've seen some injuries across the SEC. There's been a couple of impactful ones for that Tennessee defense. There's a big question mark, obviously. How quickly can Jim Knowles get the scheme embedded with these guys and get them on the right page? J.C. Sherbert has mentioned before that Jim Knowles' defense is statistically usually year two is when he has that big jump. So how quickly can he find success for them in year one? That will be I think that's the bigger question even than quarterback for them. I think that when you look at McIntyre, you have a really accurate passer with a dynamic arm. And then when you look at Faison Brandon, you have a dynamic player all around who can do pretty much everything. It's just a lack of experience. It's a lack of familiarity with the SEC speed of the game. How quickly can he get there? I do agree with you that I think Faison Brandon ends up being the guy for Tennessee. The biggest thing for me, Matt, in this matchup is – the experience at the quarterback position and the experience of and familiarity of the defense. Clayton White on the cusp of becoming the longest tenured defensive coordinator at South Carolina since Moses. And so I think that scheme, White, Torian Gray, and this staff with this defensive roster, as opposed to Jim Knowles, brand new defensive staff, reloaded defensive roster, some injuries taking some guys out. And then you look at Lenore Sellers versus either of those quarterbacks. And this game's at Williams-Brice. In the past 15 years or so, Matt, the home team typically gets it in this series between South Carolina and Tennessee. I like the Gamecocks to win this game.
All right, so the Rob has the Gamecocks finally on the board with 5 wins. It only took him an extra game. Good job, Rob. This is one of the things that I think about a lot. This is like the Florida and Tennessee games are, like you said it earlier, they're so pivotal to South Carolina because it's before a bye week, it's after a bye week. And these are two of the teams that have more success than South Carolina has had traditionally. So it's almost a put up or shut up kind of moment for me over these 3 weeks and what the Gamecocks can do. I'll go back to what we talked about with the open, Rob. I do think that Kendall Briles being on staff at South Carolina and the way that he wants to run his offense and what the Gamecocks play against is so much different than what the Gamecocks have done in practices leading up to a Tennessee game or a team that spreads the field. This one at home, and I think Shane Beamer actually has a really good record. I don't have the number in front of me coming off a bye week at home. So I'm going to give the Gamecocks a win as well. So 6-1 right now for me, 5-2 for Rob. And then we get to Oklahoma. And Oklahoma, Rob, this is the team that I think is the best defense in the SEC. I think they're one of the top five defenses in the country. The game is on the road in Norman, Oklahoma. Gamecocks have only played two times against the Sooners. They're 1-1. A lot of Gamecock fans remember the game being effectively over within the first 7 minutes 2 years ago. And then last year, the Gamecocks couldn't get anything going, right? And some of that might have been Mike Shula. It could have been a number of different things. It was not a great time of the year for the Gamecocks. But look, this Oklahoma team, and Rob, you and I have talked about it. It comes and goes with John Mateer at quarterback. Last season, John Mateer was the midseason Heisman winner. But when you look at his season overall, Rob, he had 14 passing touchdowns versus 11 interceptions. In SEC games, it was 9 passing touchdowns versus 8 interceptions. He's going to run the ball as well, but he will also put the ball on the ground. This, for me, is if John Mateer is that midseason Heisman, this is the hard one. This and Georgia, I'm getting ahead of myself, are the two hardest games on the schedule. But the more and more I look at this, Rob, I'll go ahead before you. I'll give my prediction, and you can follow up. I think the Gamecocks win this game somehow, some way, probably on the defense. But Rob, back to you.
So I went on a show called the Sooner Smith Show this week, Voice on College Football. It's an Oklahoma show to preview. They're previewing their schedule, and they asked me to come on and talk about South Carolina so we could talk about that game. They are well aware, and when I say that, I mean the Oklahoma fan base, of that game 2 years ago as well. It still sticks in their craw a little bit, I think. They are high on Lenore Sellers, high on Dylan Stewart and what he can do. You know, you're looking at just the swath over the roster. But one of the questions they asked me, Matt, as we broke that game down broke South Carolina down, was what is the most difficult game on the schedule for the Gamecocks? And I said Oklahoma. Because I agree with you. I think this is the best defense in the SEC. I think it could be the best defense in the country. The question is, for Oklahoma, the biggest question mark here for me is, how does the running game develop? They went and hired McCullough as the new running backs coach. Their rotation at the running back position, I think, will look different. The development at that position will look different. How do they allocate carries to the running backs versus John Mateer? Last year, John Mateer was averaging 20 carries per game early on in the season. We talked before about running backs in the SEC. You're always going to get banged up. If you run your quarterback the same number of times that other teams are running their running backs, he's also going to get banged up. I think they may have learned that lesson. Plus, Mateer looks like he may have added a little muscle in the offseason to take those hits a little better.
A little bit. Yes, we had a feature on him.
Yeah, you know, that might be overblown a tad, but he does look kind of jacked. How important is that? I don't know. The big thing for me is if they're going to have some more success at the running back position and not run him quite as many times, can he back down and control his gunslinger mentality and use it for good and limit turnovers for them? If all of that happens, that's a national championship team in Norman, Oklahoma. And I think that for me, Matt, is probably just a little bit too much to overcome. South Carolina has to start fast in this football game. If they get behind in Norman, I don't see this being one where they crawl back in. I think the Sooners just edge South Carolina at home in week whatever this is after the bye. I have a loss for
Yeah, it's it's one of those things where this is going to be, you have to quiet the Norman crowd, right? And you have to jump out early. Like, you cannot allow Oklahoma to dictate the game. And if they dictate the game, good luck scoring 22 points, right? This is a tough one. You know, Mateer is kind of Brett Favre to me. And it's like, if he wants to be a gunslinger, he can lose you a game or he can win, you know, multiple NFL championships. And obviously I'm not projecting John Mateer to go on to Super Bowl greatness. But what I am saying is that in college, he can be very effective. So it's one of the scariest games on the schedule for me. I have the Gamecocks at 7-1. Rob obviously hates the Gamecocks. He has them at 5-3. So now we're going to Texas A&M. And longtime viewers and listeners of this show know that Rob is not the biggest Texas A&M fan in the world this season. I still maintain that Texas A&M fades in late October, early November. It's just what they do. I will say that Marcel Reed has honestly crushed the Gamecocks outside of, you know, a game 2 years ago. He's combined for like 500 yards a game. So this is like Kyler Murray, shades of Kyler Murray. A&M has probably the most expensive roster in the country, if not top five. And the Gamecocks have felt that on the recruiting trail. But this team is a very explosive team, Rob, but at the same time, they can turn the ball over. And South Carolina somehow, some way, has averaged over 30 points per game against A&M. When I say somehow, some way, it's been kick returns, punt returns, interception returns. It hasn't all been offense. But Clayton White seems to have this team nailed down where they're not going to score 45, 46 points. And Clayton White's going to give the Gamecocks some points in this game. Special teams are going to get some points in this game. So, Rob, you know, this is one where it's a big revenge game. Like, gosh, I don't know how I buried the lead, but 30-3 halftime lead and you lost 31-30. So, Rob, thoughts here, and then we'll get to our predictions.
I don't buy Texas A&M. I don't know, who I need to speak to about the hype there. The roster is expensive. We've seen Marcel Reed be inconsistent. South Carolina has their number on the line of scrimmage. This game is at home, Matt. You mentioned the revenge aspect. I don't think that will be forgotten. Shane Beamer, if anything, we know he keeps receipts.
Yep.
And this isn't even a receipt. I think this just kind of sticks in your craw a little bit of like, wow, we really let them off the hook last year. If you're Shane Beamer and this staff, I don't see this game going in Texas A&M's direction by a long shot. I think this is a very competitive game, or it goes completely the way of the Gamecocks because the inconsistencies of Marcel Reed are glaring to me. And Colin Klein's not walking through that door. You just gave up your offensive coordinator. You promoted internally. What's really going on there? From a defensive standpoint, they changed coordinators as well. But, you know, it's Elko's defense. So that doesn't alarm me as much as the offensive side of the ball. It is later in the season, and maybe they've established something. But if we've learned anything around here, Matt, it's that offensive coordinator and the play caller really matters regardless of what type of talent you have on the roster. They're going to have to prove it to me, the Aggies, I mean, before I'm really buying this. You know, you put me on blast on the morning show with Jamie the other day and made him think that I had a serious prediction that they were going to miss, that the Aggies were going to miss a bowl game, when that was for our like stars align way out there
prediction. No, Rob, I said this was a crazy out there prediction. I just want to get Raphael's take on it.
He did not hear that part.
He agreed with you. He was like, JB, yeah, I can see
no,
it.
I'm talking about JB.
Oh, JB.
It went right past him that you said it was our wild out there predictions. But I don't think they're going to be as good as a playoff team like they were last year. I think this is a win for South Carolina.
You know, I think that last year in this particular game, and before I even said it, I already wrote down the win for South Carolina. I knew where you were going. But thankfully, Rob finally has the Gamecocks at bowl eligible. So they got three games to figure out where they're going. maybe the college football playoff, maybe not. But
we'll see.
Anyway, yeah, this is a game where I think like the home field advantage really favored the Aggies last year. I don't know why, but somehow, some way, the Gamecocks have figured out Texas A&M. And this is a game at home for South Carolina. There's going to be a lot of bad blood in the game. I have the Gamecocks winning this game as well. So, sorry we're laughing, guys. We have a little text message going, and the running bit is that I cannot pronounce anything, but I pronounced FaceTime Brandon correctly. So, it's funny. A little ITG insider right there.
It is funny. Matt's pronunciations. That's my mission this week is to make reels of Matt's pronunciations. That's our blooper thing.
Yeah, a little inside baseball here again. If you ever hear me say like, "Oh, the second quarter, Rob," like talk about it. That's what I'm doing. Yeah. I have a little dyslexia, but so Rob, you know, right now I have the Gamecocks at 8-1. You have them at 6-3. They head on the road to Arkansas. Arkansas is a tough team for me because they lost 67 players in the transfer portal. They added 49, right? So they went winless last year in the SEC, but they also averaged 30-plus points per game. Like, I mean, they had three or four games that they lost by six or less points that were just shootouts. So if this defense is better, you know, I've actually been on the record with JB on inside the Gamecocks morning show saying I think Arkansas could be that surprise team that maybe wins 7, 8, 9 games this year despite their schedule. And it's an outlandish thing when you look at it and you look at all the national media saying this is the worst team in the SEC. For the Gamecocks, I really hope it's the worst team in the SEC at this point of the season because they can't afford to drop one. I saw a comment in the chat box that's saying 4-2 going to the bye week is a recipe for disaster with the last six games on the schedule. And yes, it actually could be. So, Rob, you know, I've laid it out. You know, the defense gave up 37 points per game last year. This is a road game. Arkansas is a tough place to get to. It's not a normal SEC environment. So I have the Gamecocks winning this game, but it might be the scariest road game on the schedule for me.
I don't have a lot to add here. I don't know what Arkansas has. You know what I mean? They have.
Yeah.
It has been well documented. They have SEC retreads, and they have G5 guys trying to level up. It's a lot that has to come together for Ryan Silverfield in Fayetteville. I think they're going to have a really tough year again, Matt. I think this is a win for South Carolina. Going to be cold probably at this point in the year in Arkansas. I expect this to kind of be one of those long sleeve and hoodie games.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can remember a long sleeve and hoodie game when Ryan Mallett put 50 plus points on the Gamecocks, and I can remember being cold in my University of South Carolina dorm room when Darren McFadden and Felix Jones both racked up over 200 yards rushing against the Gamecocks. So those weird boys, things
those
happen.
Boys are not, those boys are not on that roster. I'll just let you know.
I know, but PTSD, right, Rob?
That's fair.
All right. So Rob, I'm assuming you have a win for the Gamecocks here.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
All right. So I'm terrified of this, but I have the Gamecocks at 9-1. Rob has the Gamecocks at 7-3. And now this becomes the one game on the schedule, Rob, where I don't know how South Carolina wins. We've seen the Gamecocks do well against Georgia. They're 7-16 since the year 2001. Georgia's been heavily favored in almost all of these games. We all remember the Izzy. Do it. Just say it for me.
McQuamu
game where he had three interceptions in the Gamecocks for 28-point underdogs. They ended up winning that game. DeCarrion Joyner came in and kind of saved the day after Ryan Helinski was forced out of the game. So I can't say anything's off the table with South Carolina and Georgia, but what I can say is this particular Georgia team, the way Gunnar Stockton runs this offense, the way the defense isn't going to make mistakes, it's extremely hard for me to pick a Gamecock victory here. So I'm going to give the Gamecocks a loss, and the Gamecocks will now be at 9-2 for me.
Yeah, I have a loss here too. But you know, I think Georgia's probably the best team in the country, maybe Ohio State. I like Georgia in the SEC. I think Texas is the major challenger for them. We mentioned Oklahoma's defense. If Mateer puts it together, that team's going to be big in the SEC. But I think that Georgia quietly flying under the radar should be the favorite to win the SEC, and they are, right? And they're just not getting any talk about that. My surefire bet for one of my national or one of my SEC picks last week was Georgia makes the college football playoff one way or another, Matt, whether that's winning the SEC or not. I think that they're in. I think there's just crazy talent on this roster. It's Kirby Smart, and they've counted him out somehow, some way. I think that's a mistake, and I don't think this is so much about South Carolina. I think Shane Beamer, like you mentioned before, has the most talent on this team that he's ever had. I think that his coaching staff is stronger than it's ever been. I think that South Carolina can be very competitive in this game. I think that they can win this game. It's obviously a game at Williams-Brice. It also alarms me a little bit, Matt, that you're playing Georgia this late in the year. Spurrier was right. Look, you want to catch them early.
Gamecock fans should have loved that game three of the season. That's probably where a lot of those wins came from, Rob.
You want to catch them early. This one here, late in the year, I think Gunnar Stockton is rolling at that point, and it's going to be a little much for South Carolina. I have a win for the Dogs.
Yeah, it's hard for me because, you know, Gamecocks would be 8-1 coming into it. Georgia might be undefeated. They might have one loss as well. This might be a college game day type environment, and it being at home. Gamecock fans have way too many experiences of a letdown on a major big time prime time game. But this is just a game where the Gamecocks are a little too far behind Georgia from a talent standpoint. And no matter what anybody wants to say, I do want to give a shout out to Harrison Lutheran, who is in the chat, and he is also a part of the BigSpur.com. He actually mentioned, and I'm going to give a couple shout-outs here first, but he mentioned on the show on Friday that I was on with JB that Georgia received zero first-place votes in the AP poll, I believe. And Harrison, if I'm wrong, you know, please correct me, but you talk about Georgia being under the radar, that's a crazy, crazy statistic.
Yeah, I don't know what people are looking at, to be honest with you. I just don't understand. Did they just fall? I mean, they haven't won a national championship since they went back to back 4 years ago. Oh man,
played for three in a row.
They must really suck. Like, I just don't know. I don't know what the fall off mentality here is, but they are a national championship contender and the leader in the clubhouse for the SEC. I don't know. That's just I think you got to have high expectations for Georgia.
All right. Well, Harrison said he did not provide that information, but somebody else did. And Harrison also put in the chat earlier that Shane Beamer is 7-0 in SEC home games in the month of November. So, you know, as we look at this future schedule, it is a big deal for South Carolina and Shane Beamer. And the Gamecocks usually get better towards the end of the season. So, Rob, I got the Gamecocks at 9-2. You got the Gamecocks at 7-4. This is the game that everybody cares about in the state of South Carolina. I don't care who you are.
Oh, do we have one more to pick?
What's that?
Do we have one more to pick? I thought that was it. Is there another game that we have to talk about?
Oh, I think it's the – yeah, you're right. It's Georgia Tech in Georgia, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Or Auburn, Alabama. Something like that. But yeah, we do have one more game to pick. And this is the game that even if you went to Furman, Charleston Southern, Winthrop, wherever, if you graduated from the University of South Carolina or lived in the state of South Carolina, graduated from any South Carolina state school, you're paying attention to this. This is what everyone's going to be talking about. On Thanksgiving Thursday, when they're sitting around the family, you're going to have Gamecocks, you're going to have Clemson guys, you're going to have guys that don't care but actually want to put their opinion on it. Since 2001, Rob, the Gamecocks are 9-16 in this rivalry. The Gamecocks did have a 5-game winning streak under Steve Spurrier from 2009 to 2013. Clemson obviously went on their run. It's been, you know, well documented, 2 national championships, all of that. But this is the year, Rob, where I think that the talent might be on the same level. Clemson has not beat South Carolina in Death Valley, you know, where Clemson plays, since 2018. So there are some real historical things that are happening here. The road team has been very successful in this rivalry. South Carolina will go on the road at Clemson. So, Rob, Shane Beamer is, I guess, what, 2-3 against Clemson in his Gamecock career. Does he make it 3-3 and help the Gamecocks get one more win in that record total?
Well, I think that everybody in the chat and everybody listening, if you're watching this on YouTube, you're listening back on podcasts, fired up about this. My dog has gotten up off of his bed. He's even fired up for this one, okay? And he can barely, he's old. He can barely stand. You got him up for this one. But yeah, this is a game that like you said, is the talk of the state when we get there. This Clemson team, Matt, you know, does not have the across the board elite level talent that we've seen them have in years past. Quarterback continues to be a question mark for me. You got back-to-back generational guys, and I don't use the generational word lightly, but Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence back-to-back, I think, set expectations that every five-star coming through those doors was going to be a world-beating, game-changing, generational-style quarterback, and they've had a run of guys who have not been able to live up to the billing. Now you have Vezina. Tate Reynolds comes in as a freshman and is really challenging. I've talked to a few different coaches about this Clemson team, and I've heard things like the talent of Tate Reynolds is going to take over at some point. I've heard things like this is a situation like they were in with Trevor Lawrence, where if you have an opportunity mid year for the jump to happen, that's going to be the case. I think Vezina starts early. We'll see how it goes further down the road, Matt. What is Clemson's motivation at that point beyond pride in the rivalry? They have some we pick their schedule. They have some opportunities to drop some games. Just big, big question marks for me when it comes to this Clemson football team. But the thing that is consistent, you mentioned it before, road team gets it done. For almost the past decade in this one, almost every time.
Yeah.
So, give me the Gamecocks to finish strong, 8-4, get a win against the Tigers, and some good favor for Shane Beamer and the staff to end the season.
Well, Rob, despite picking the Gamecocks to go 8-4, you've made a lot of friends here at the end of the show, so you might be invited back on Sunday next week.
I know how to close.
Yeah, Rob is a closer. You know, for me, this game boils down to a couple different things. Like, I think that the team that loses this game usually makes more unforced mistakes. And if South Carolina is going to make, you know, an unforced error, they will lose this game. Trust me. If Clemson is not playing for a college football playoff, those fans will still be there. And they will be loud. And they will be excited. This game has gotten the noon kickoff for a while. It's probably going to be a noon kickoff again. That might help South Carolina. It might hurt South Carolina. I don't know where their mind's going to be. We're predicting 3 months ahead. Again, reminder here. But I do think that Clemson has, best way to say it, is fallen off from a talent level. And generational quarterbacks, like you mentioned, Rob, do matter. I don't think that Clemson has a generational quarterback this season. I think that Lenore Sellers is the best quarterback that's played at either school over the last 4 or 5 years, give or take. I do think this will be a motivational game for South Carolina. You know, it's hard for me not to pick South Carolina just because I do think that, you know, the talent level has been, like I just mentioned, going back towards South Carolina's favor. I don't think that Clemson is going to be as fatigued or injured as South Carolina. That usually plays a role in this game. South Carolina goes through a gauntlet of a schedule. They usually have more injuries. But I will pick the Gamecocks to win this game. I have the Gamecocks going 10-2 for, you know, probably like the third straight year. I think 3 years ago I picked them to go 9 wins. Last year, 10. And I think the year before I picked 8. So I think the Gamecocks will find a way to get to 10 wins this year. I can't guarantee that every win or loss that Rob and I predicted is how it's going to work out, but I'll have the Gamecocks going 10-2, Rob 8-4. And look, everybody, we are less than 2 weeks till Gamecock football kickoff. So I know the excitement is buzzing.
Matt, can I ask one question before we close up here on your 10-2?
Yeah.
I have the Gamecocks 8-4. I'm going to go a step further and predict that's a ReliaQuest matchup against Southern Cal. So you get a battle of USC's in Florida. You tell me, is 10-2 good enough to get into the college football playoff?
10-2 in the SEC is good enough to get into the college football playoff. 9, I don't know. But look, you know, there are a number of swing games on this schedule, Rob. I think Clemson's a swing game. Georgia, probably not a swing game. Arkansas, probably not a swing game. Texas A&M, swing game. Oklahoma, swing game. Going back through it, Tennessee, Florida, Alabama, Mississippi State. There are a lot of swing games. So, you know, like, Rob, I'll actually ask you a question back only because you opened the door. But, what's your range here? Worst case, best case? I'll answer it after you, so don't feel like you're
worst
on the spot.
I think worst case is 6-6. And best case is probably 10-2, where you have them. That's kind of the range that I'm working in. And you see, I have them right in the middle at 8-4.
I think that you're probably more right than I am. I think that, you know, worst case is like 7 wins. I think absolute worst case. I think they'll find a way to get 7 one way or another. Best case, I do think is 10-2. Like I said, I can't predict where those losses come with absolute certainty, but I do think this Gamecock team is ready to do a level jump, and they are ready to go find a way to get back to college football playoffs. Shane Beamer was correct in saying that they were right there on the cusp 2 years ago. Last season, there were a number of games in the fourth quarter the Gamecocks just could not find a way to stay in. They couldn't close it. They collapsed. I think that, you know, we had our predictions last week, Rob. I do believe that Lenore Sellers is one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the country. And if you have a top 10 quarterback, and we haven't even talked about injuries and what that might mean with Dylan Stewart, Jacarius Speed, maybe we'll talk about that next week. But yeah, I think 10-2, 7-4 is best and worst.
There you have it. You guys have a lot of thoughts. Look, the chat box has been on fire tonight. Thank you to everybody for being over there. We appreciate you interacting with us for sure. And you can tell. You can feel it in the air, Matt. Maybe some cooler days this week in South Carolina. Football season is here.
I feel the optimism pouring through the chat box. And look, you know, Rob, I appreciate you being a straight shooter as always. Thank you.
These are clear lenses. They're not garnet tonight.
I see the glare, so I didn't know if there was actually lenses in there. You're just looking pretty cool. But, guys, we appreciate y'all. Guys and gals, thank you for being with us tonight. I know we went a little bit long. That's probably going to be the routine with me and Rob. We can go on a couple of different conversations that you just get batted back and forth. But thank you so much for being here with us tonight. When you spend this time with us, you give us the most valuable thing you have, and we've taken more time tonight. So, we definitely appreciate it. We'll be back on Sunday night, and we got to get into the season even more, Rob. Like, we're going to have more fallout. Maybe we'll get a depth chart. Probably not, but maybe. But Rob and I will have our ears to the ground. We'll be giving you all the Gamecock coverage we can. So thank you so much. For Rob, for myself, I hope you all have a great evening. See ya.